I was cycling past Rosenborg Castle in the old part of Copenhagen this week, and the sound of the Royal Life Guards band rehearsing wafted across the parkland. I dismounted and parked my bike next to the railing surrounding the castle, which houses the Danish crown jewels as well as the guards' barracks. The light was pale and translucent. The sun was dancing between low cumulus clouds. After a long, dark winter, spring was on its way. With its ornate copper roof and Dutch Renaissance brickwork, the castle was postcard perfect. I waited until two recruits with assault rifles shouldered marched into frame, and I took a photograph. The band and their ceremonial escort in bearskins and dark blue greatcoats were forming up on the parade ground 100 yards distant. It was still half an hour before they would start their daily march to the Queen's Palace at Amalienborg. I could take another picture another day. As she reached for her bike, my wife pointed out a man of Somali appearance wearing a kefir, turning away from the barracks. He had been watching the same scene as we had, and he strode off as soon as he realized that my wife was looking at him. Was he an innocent tourist just enjoying the view, or was he scoping the place? Having that brief discussion saddened me. Until 3 weeks ago, I only ever associated the Royal Life Guards with quaint, tiny, tolerant, tranquil Denmark, the happiest nation on earth, the land of little tin soldiers and Hans Christian Andersen. Now I thought they were a potential soft target, and my mind went back to 1982 when the IRA blew up the Household Cavalry in London's Hyde Park. The brief, deadly jihad of Omar El Hussein, a 22-year-old radicalized gangster, has stolen Denmark's innocence and turned this formerly laid-back oasis into a paramilitary state. Instead of crocuses and daffodils, spring has sprung a crop of police wearing helmets, body armour, and cradling top-of-the-range Heckler and Koch rifles. They are ubiquitous. Outside Parliament, the courthouse, the synagogue, where El Hussein killed Dan Uzan, the security guard. They were outside the church, where filmmaker Finn Norgaard was being eulogised. He was murdered in the cultural cafe just around the corner from our apartment. We heard the shots as we headed back from a visit out of town. At least the police guards have now left the environs of the cafe, and perhaps it can return to staging jazz gigs. I had a discussion with the man who might become Denmark's next foreign minister, Søren Espersen, of the Danish People's Party, the equivalent of UKIP. Our policemen never used to have pistols, he said, but we got used to it, and we'll have to get used to the heavier weapons and extra vigilance. Espersen talks in quotes. He can't understand why predominantly Muslim refugees who've been offered sanctuary from wars and dictators can turn against the country which has offered them freedom. This is a wonderful society, he said, full of opportunities for young people. Get on with it and stop whining. A couple of days later, I went to a meeting of Hizb ut-Tahrir, the extreme Islamist party that's banned in Germany and Russia. It espouses Sharia law and has ambitions of creating a worldwide caliphate. Non-violently, it insists, ensuring it stays on the right side of the law. Spend an hour or so in the company of this organisation and it's clear that there is a total disconnect between its ideology and Danish principles of democracy and free expression. I listened to a speech by Eunice Kock, a young red-haired Danish convert who, one of my Facebook friends joked, resembled Damian Lewis, the Muslim double agent in the American series Homeland. Kock was very unhappy about a report I did a month before El Hussein's attacks, which highlighted the links between Hizb ut-Tahrir and criminal gang members. He addressed the audience with a tone of profound irony. "The Danes are trying to tell us that Islam is fine," he preached. "All you have to do is to denounce your Islamic views and stay silent while the Danes kill your brothers and sisters. Accept their values and way of life, and then we can all be friends." Like other leading members of Hizb ut-Tahrir, Kock is intelligent and articulate. His immediate superior, a Dane called Elias Lamrabet, is cut from the same cloth and turned in a masterly interview performance, failing to answer penetrating questions and seamlessly spouting the party line. Radicalised criminals have nothing to do with Hizb ut-Tahrir. They become violent criminals because of the failings of Western Hollywood-inspired culture and are radicalised by the anti-Islamic policies of the Danish state. He couldn't disguise his contempt as he dealt with the issue of a potential ban of Hizb ut-Tahrir. It demonstrated, he said, the intellectual bankruptcy of the Danish Parliament. "So, what is your message to the Jews of Copenhagen, who are feeling rather vulnerable?" I asked. Without missing a beat, Lamrabet replied that he didn't feel responsible for sending a message to the Jews, who he said were not particularly vulnerable. How can you say they're not vulnerable? I replied, with the image of Dan Uzan's grave next to the Holocaust memorial firmly in my mind. I'm not prepared to comment, he said. This interview is over. He fingered his scarf, and his eyes wavered. For a moment, the mask had slipped. Years of studying people's body language told me that Lamrabbit had just revealed his true face and that of his followers. There have been three other conversations that have deeply resonated with me during the past 3 weeks. One was with Meta Miriam Bento, the mother of Hannah, the 12-year-old, who was having the bat mitzvah party in the synagogue complex when Omar El Hussein opened fire. I don't teach my children to hate. I wish others would do the same, said Meta. She was referring to Arab and Muslim parents. A moderate Swedish imam I know called Samir Muric said he was offended by those comments. He is doing his best to defeat the Islamists just across the water and to build bridges. Then I spoke to Pernille Ostrom, the vicar of Norbro, the predominantly immigrant district of Copenhagen where Omar El Hussein grew up and was shot dead by police. Pernille is on the front line of integration and holds regular functions for Muslim children and families. What is deeply frustrating, she said, is that when they go back home behind closed doors, they're told by their parents that the people of other religions are lesser human beings. I hope that the man with the kafir, who was observing the royal guards, was enjoying the scenery. This is a wonderful country. But I share the view of a Jewish mourner called Daughter, whom I met at Dan Uzan's funeral. I want it to return to being nice, quiet little Denmark, the happiest country on earth, she said. But I'm not sure if that's possible.